So we're joined by Dave Thomas from the English Institute of Sport. So Dave, you are wearing some very nice sailing stash at the moment, but can you tell us, well, who you are, what your job title is and what you do?
Okay, yeah, hopefully I ought to be able to answer that. Thanks for the intro, Sam. My name's Dave. I'm a performance innovation consultant at the English Institute of Sport. The EIS is, I think I'm right in saying, the UK's largest provider of sports science, medicine and technology to sport. We service most of the Olympic and Paralympic programmes in the UK. The team I sit in, Performance Innovation, kind of sit outside, I suppose, what would be termed normal sports science provision. And what we are here to do is help sports tackle really difficult performance questions that perhaps they might be outside of their normal skill set, or they might not have the contacts with a network of expertise to really help them tackle that. And that might be something from an engineering-y type space, which is where I sit, but equally we do lots of stuff in behavior change, in human science. So basically it tends to be from quite a multidisciplinary background from where we come from. So it's about bringing a new lens to the challenges that sports have got and seeing if we can help them to do their best work.
Well, and how far into your career are you, Dave, and how did you get to the position that you're at now?
So I've been in sport for about 6 years. Before that, I worked as an engineer in the automotive industry for 10 or 11 years or so. And that was always a really interesting technical challenge. But I guess 7 or 8 years or so into it, I started to ask myself questions about purpose for myself and whether it was something I really was really going to continue to get me out of bed every day for the rest of my life. And around that time, I read Alan Carter's book, Seeing Red, which is, I don't know whether you guys would have read it, but he was the performance analyst at Wales for sort of 12 years or so. And just reading through it, I thought, well, that sounds fascinating. It sounds like something that perhaps my skills would be well aligned to. And I've always been I was a huge rugby fan growing up and everything. So that's sort of where the goal was. And one morning, I remember being sat in the M4, in the back of a car, and went, it's time to change. So I went to Cardiff Met, did my PA degree. And that was just wrapping up. I remember I submitted my dissertation. And about 3 weeks later, the job advert came out for this, which was a really neat fit, actually, because they were asking for someone with an engineering background who also had a qualification in sport. So I sort of plucked up the courage to go through with it and apply. And yeah, luckily enough, was successful. So I've been here for about 6 years or so.
Has that automotive background come in useful at any point specifically with any of the projects you've done? I'm sure obviously handling data and things like that, obviously, but specifically around cars?
Not around cars. And to be honest, it was probably never my strong point in there anyway. So it's not, right, not okay. Too bad that I left. But it's definitely, I suppose, the engineering approach to problem solving has been really helpful. So that kind of being methodical and trying to break a problem down into its component parts and working your way through something where it's you know, just how you approach any sort of problem solving, I suppose. And in my role, some of what I have to do is quite engineering based, but it applies to most other problems that we find in terms of trying to unpick it and go, right, what's the reason why this isn't working, or what problem are we trying to address? And I suppose the thing where it's really played to my strengths, I suppose, at the EIS, is it means when it comes to scoping out a problem or trying to understand a question that's being asked by someone in a sport, you know, it's important that we really pay attention to not just what the request is, but actually what lies beneath it, and whether answering the question is going to solve the problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I think that's a really, really important bit that you just touched on, and those performance questions that certain sports have connect connecting with those questions and understanding them implicitly, given their environment, is obviously critical to then the solution that you deliver. If you got a sort of a process, you said, you know, you have that sort of engineering approach and quite methodical. Do you have a consistent way that you approach a problem from sort of first principles like that, or a way of questioning them to tease out the key parts? Because I guess you'll work with sports that you're not that familiar with initially.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. I mean, when I came in, as I say, my sporting background, if you could call it that, was being a not very good rugby player.
Talk yourself up.
Yeah. And so when I came in, you know, Olympic sport was quite new to me. And one of the challenges I had, but it's because of the nature of the role, it's consistent throughout, is very often you'll go into a sport that's just completely unfamiliar to you. You know, not everybody grows up watching canoeing or sailing or even hockey, you know. So the very first thing that I do, and it began as out of, you know, naivety and humility, but now it's perhaps a little bit more by design, is you go in and you ask questions and you try and understand the nature of the sport, the kind of the culture that you're working in, who is where the wisdom lies. You know, and start trying to connect with that as much as possible, because it's very easy to go in with an engineering hat on and go, there's a problem, here's the engineering solution to it. And if you do that in isolation, you miss a huge amount of the context. You probably miss most of the problem, to be honest. And so it sounds a bit trite, but it's people first, because if you don't do that bit, it doesn't matter how good the solution is, it's not going to land anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really cool phrase you used there, where the wisdom is. By design, you know, the people at the top of organizations don't always have the best viewpoint of what's going on, because they're not necessarily close enough to the action at times, but they might be the ones sort of driving the project. How do you then locate where the right people are to speak to, or dedicate the time to find out the different perspectives? Because that can't be easy or a quick thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quick, and we're in quite a fortunate position in our team, in that we are, you know, responsibly, we're granted a bit of time to go in and spend time with people to just build those relationships and develop that trust. And perhaps, you know, you might go in and do a very low level project where you think there might be a quick win in there, and you go in and you develop some rapport and you develop some trust, and you know, you deliver something that's meaningful and useful. But the most important thing in that process is actually developing that relationship, or those relationships in there, and also from our side kind of assessing the landscape and the culture a little bit, so that we can, you know, not from a sinister way, but so much as just to go, right, where are those pockets of real expertise in here? Where is the, you know, the physio who's been there for 20 years or something, knows the sport inside out, that kind of thing. Because that's where you get the intangible stuff that actually separates us from perhaps just bringing in some, you know, management consultants in who might not get that nuance.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Dave, for some of the listeners who perhaps are not so embedded in the performance analysis world, could you give a kind of a specific example of something that you have done and kind of how you achieved that?
Yeah, so I mean, I was asked to, I won't name the sport because I haven't got the permission to do it, but there was a coach last year actually who had a question that he was working on for a coaching qualification, and there was a performance analysis input into that, and it happened that at that time there were between analysts in that sport. So I was asked to come in and provide a bit of support, and what that involved for in that instance was they had quite a big data source that was automatically generated in terms of, it wasn't GPS, but it's effectively GPS, if that makes sense. Mm. So they're sat on a whole load of data. There's a suspicion that there's something meaningful in there, but probably don't quite know what might be in there when we start to scratch around and having a look at it. The coach had some specific questions regarding technique, and there was a bit of an open question there really about how, if is that something that we could start to address in a bit more of a, you know, an objective or systematic way if we were starting to exploit this data set. So the data itself is quite high frequency, and by that I mean, you know, you're getting something like 50 records a second. So it's quite large, it's coming in quite thick and fast, and it's quite what you might call, you know, fine granular. And so my role there was really, it was quite a nice iterative process, and to spend some time with the coach in the first instance, try and unpick what it was that what was important to him in the coaching process, what did he feel were the important technical components of his sport, and having had a bit of a glance at the data ahead of time, you can start to see those little opportunities where the dots might join up, and you go, okay, well, I think maybe that we might be able to start to tease out of the data a little bit. The process from there really was have a conversation, have a look at the data, pull out some graphs, have a look at it, you know, sit and spend some time together in person over a coffee and tease through it. And I'd ask plenty of, I like to call them expertly crafted, naive questions, but I think other people call them stupid questions. But so spent lots of time doing that, but equally, you know, pushing back in the other direction a little bit and going, well, I think I've seen this. Does this make sense? Or is this the kind of thing that you're looking for? We went around in circles in a good way over the course of sort of 2 or 3 months, and actually got to the point where there's something there that we felt was meaningful enough to start baking into the performance process. I suppose where my role is different to that of a performance analyst, because I'm not a PA in my role, is I tend not to be on the ground doing that kind of frontline delivery to a coach. What we would do in our team is develop a system and quite deliberately design ourselves out of that process. So what's the success for me is having been through that, then packaging it up into a way in a workflow that the incoming analyst can then adopt. So they're not then incumbent on me to keep producing those reports or every time a piece of code needs updating, me being in there doing it.
You mentioned, Dave, at the start there, and also you mentioned in one of your previous answers that it's about asking those naive questions and kind of going in and not pretending that you know everything about the sport. Do that take time to build up the confidence to kind of be prepared to look a little bit silly and kind of ask a question that perhaps, you know, people thought you might have known?
I think it's one of the unique things about working in a centralized team in Olympic sport, I think, because there's an acceptance that you can't know every sport. And I think, hopefully I'm not speaking out of turn, but most Olympic sports would recognize that they're not a football or a cricket. And so they perhaps wouldn't have penetrated the public consciousness in the same way. So there's an acceptance. But equally, you know, you go in and you know you're not the expert in that respect. We're very fortunate that our team has got quite a long history of doing really good work in this space, not in every sport. But so we can draw on the reputational credibility of that team from our skill set. So we bring something to the table on that when we come in, and we carry that credibility in with us. And that kind of makes it much safer, I suppose, to say, I don't know about your world. Can you tell me about it? And then, you know, I might have something to share from our side as well. It's definitely something that grows, and I would say it's easier to do it when it's not something that is supposedly in my technical wheelhouse. So yeah. I find it much harder to you know, being perfectly honest, to say I don't know if it's something that I feel like I should know. But going into a new sport and trying to understand that culture or even the rules of the sport. I mean, you do your diligence before you go in and you work out, you know, you do some basic research, but you're always going to have those blind spots. And I suppose sport's very funny in its use of language and how different it is from sport to sport. I mean, sailing's a classic example, right? And there's so much of the English language that uses kind of just sailing terminology all the time, like changing tack and stuff. So you're in there and you're seeing stuff all the time. Going, oh, right, that's where that comes from. But because of that, it kind of grants you a license to ask those questions around stuff that will become very second nature to people who are in the sport, and positioning yourself in that way, you can start to then go, okay, well, why is that like that? Mm. You know, and start to just gently ask those questions and get people's reasoning and understanding underneath it. Yeah. You know, I don't have a problem with looking silly.
Do you work across multiple sports now, Dave, or are you just embedded with one currently?
Yeah, I mean, so the way our team works is that we, unlike elsewhere in the EIS, so a strength and conditioning coach or a physio might be wholly embedded in the sport, but we're a centralized team, so it does happen by exception, but typically we would be floating between sports depending on where the projects are. So at the moment I'm working with sailing, I'm still doing a bit with canoe slalom, I've got a big one on with hockey at the moment, and then we're in the, you know, starting to think about Paris. We're in the quite far in the background, but thinking about what we might do in some sports if we think there's a bit of headroom there where we can make an impact.
And are you able to sort of work across a number of sports that might have commonalities in the type of project that they would want, and almost spread the impact of a project that you work on that might then work across multiple ones in a similar sector? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And that's the dream. I mean, I tend to always end up working with sports that are either cold, wet, or both. that brings common challenges with it. And, you know, some of the sports that happen outside or on water, there's, you know, the elements play a big part of the performance context. You know, it wouldn't be a surprise to hear that, you know, sailing, they're quite interested in the weather. So some of the things that we would learn in a sailing, you might then be able to take to rowing or to canoeing, and albeit in a different way. Some of the technologies and the methodologies underpinning it might be quite common, but making it fit for the need, fit for the sport, fit for the people involved in the sport it might look very different on the surface and how it's interacted with. And I suppose one thing that is really key in my role is making sure that when a practitioner or a coach or perhaps an athlete is left with something that they're interfacing with, is that it suits them. And that's really important to us. And it means that while we might have preferred ways of working on from some technical things, or we've got a big network of suppliers who we really trust and are massively valuable to us, and we would, you know, we're always looking to expand that, but we do have people who are really important to us. How we deploy them might look different in one sport to another. And that might be because of all sorts of reasons. It could be sport culture. It could be, it could be because of the sensitive nature of a project. But yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, from a making use of the Institute as it should be, I mean, that's really the goal, is if we can develop something in one sport, can we then sweat that value by deploying it in three or four other ones?
Those economies of scale absolutely make sense for EIS and for you guys, and feels absolutely the right thing to do. How do some of the sports feel about that, though, and whether they feel that there's some IP that they've generated within a solution, given that, you know, considering the success of Team GB over the last 8 years, these sports are actually competing against each other for UK sport funding these days, aren't they? And that is not easy to get. Do they ever get a little bit competitive between sports?
I would say that they're pretty good.
Okay.
To be honest. And I think for the most part...
Is that your political answer?
That is the answer. In my experience, the sports that I have worked with and the coaches that I have worked with and the scientists I've worked with have all been very generous in ensuring that the, you know, if they, for instance, if we've got a piece of testing equipment and there is spare capacity on that, there's, you know, there are examples of them sharing that where it's appropriate. You know, the transferable IP one is really interesting. I haven't seen it spoken about from a, you know, to pluck two sports out of the hat, para-equestrian versus boxing. You know, and it's, I think most people understand that in investing in us, part of what they're investing in is that connection in the widest of the wider system and making use of, you know, for instance, we have a relationship with Sheffield Hallam, and it wouldn't be a surprise to hear that some of the code base is quite common underneath, you know, that underpins some of the projects that some of the sports would work from, and they, you know, they get that, and that's why we're able to, as you say, that's why the economies of scale thing works. So I think everybody understands the game that they're in, and we are all trying to get more medals for Great Britain at the end of the day.
I was only trying to be awkward with that question.
Need to run that one past comms before it goes out.
Yeah. Oh my god.
So, Dave, how has your approach changed over time? So, I guess from those early days of doing your performance analysis degree at Cardiff to now,
I would say I'm definitely more. I've spoken to it already, and I'm more considered, I think, in presuming I don't know the answer, I suppose, and that thing about designing myself out of the process has become more and more important, I suppose, because when you come in as, you know, I was in my 30s, but was quite green from a sport perspective, and I'd only ever worked in an organization where you work there, and you know and what we do, we go into sports and we help them, we hopefully leave them something they can live with, but then we need to be able to do other projects. And so what I, you know, a couple of things that I probably burnt my fingers on a little bit early doors was developing things out of good intentions. And so for argument's sake, there was some work I did in sailing very early on in my career in sport, where I'd go in and speed up their daily report stuff. So there was quite a lot of, well, not daily reports, but regatta reports. So I went in and it was quite manual, quite a lot of reformatting of data, quite a lot of plotting of data. And so I wrote some Visual Basic scripts to speed that up. So it basically went from being 4 hours to half an hour. All cool. What I hadn't really appreciated is that I'd, in doing that without providing a means for the sport to maintain that themselves, I'd created a dependency on myself. So whenever over the next couple of years or so there was an issue with that tool, all of a sudden, you know, good reason, I'm the one getting a phone call. But of course, my capacity, like I, in my role, I can't protect that capacity to maintain every project that we deliver. So we're much more mindful of that, or I'm much more mindful of that, and the, you know, how's something going to live once it's been adopted, and then hand in hand with that, the process of adoption, I'm much more conscious of. That's something that engineering hadn't really given me, because we were in a, you know, we large scale manufacturing, we're going to make what we're told to make, right? And that's just what's happening. We do our best job of doing that, because the decisions are made at a really high level. When we're into implementing things in sport, however, you're really, really into behavior change. And so the individuals who are involved, not just directly on the project itself, but in the periphery and around it and in the sport, they're really important, you know, and including them in the design of the delivery process is really vital in getting something over the line if you want it to succeed. And I would say that kind of in the first couple of years that where projects failed, it wasn't down to the technology for the most part. It was more down to, you know, me probably not understanding the reasons, you know, the good reasons someone might have for not wanting to adopt change. You know, they might be very happy in the role that they're playing. They might, you know, some of their sense of self might be bound up in the thing that you're seeking to replace, you know, and having been through a couple of those painful experiences, I suppose, it's just made me think a bit more about being much more deliberate in that. And, you know, you never get it 100% right. But if you start to think about the people who are in the process as opposed to just the thing that you're going to deliver, it does make a big difference, I think.
I know that we have quite a few students who are listening to the pod, and obviously a big part of what they want to do is get to the position that you're both in, where they have a job in the sport. I think one of the things that's probably crucial is that the advance of technology is so rapid that, you know, 6 years ago, maybe, or maybe a little bit longer when you started, Dave, that was, you know, it was kind of enough to have a relatively basic level of understanding of, say, databases and statistical programming and that kind of thing. Whereas now, to really stand out, you need a bit more. What technologies or skills have you learned, or what are the main ones that you've learned in your time?
So I came in with a bit of a background in scripting and programming and stuff from engineering land, which would have been, would have been in MATLAB or Visual Basic. MATLAB's largely an engineering toolbox, I suppose. But where I'm seeing that kind of move, and I'm in the middle of trying to transition as well, is into your more open source languages. So your Pythons, your Rs. And I think, you know, because they're open source, there's a huge community of support out on, obviously, online. There's for 12 quid, you can learn, you know, Python in a weekend or whatever the course is. And I think, well, you can't, but you can get started. And I think that's a really important thing for me. And in fact, it's something the EIS is starting to drive internally, actually, across a few different disciplines, is the development of that capacity within our practitioners, because it offers you a couple of things. Number one, it means you can proceduralize some of the boring parts of your job. So you don't want to be copying and pasting data. You just don't. And you don't want to be, every time you open a file, you don't want to have to be reformatting it the same way that you had to reformat it last time. And, you know, Mike, you will have seen this from downloading, you know, taking data off Federation websites and stuff. It's always in an inconvenient format. And it always changes for the Olympics as well. And so if you can buy yourself some time by figuring out how to script that out of your workflow or to just automate those things. And it's just the same if you're doing a standard report every week, being able to Monday morning, or even you schedule it so it runs Sunday night, pulls the data in, processes it, turns it into the visuals that you want it to. That's a massive leg up. And I think it's something that's really growing in the field at the moment. And I was perhaps lucky to have started just before that really started to blossom. But I would say to anyone looking to get into a, not just performance analysis, but probably biomech or physiology as well, if you could arm yourself with some of that, it's going to let you do some of the boring stuff much faster, which allows you to do the fun stuff more of your time. And the other thing it allows you to do is start to manipulate data in different ways, which means that you can ask more difficult questions of it, I suppose. The other thing that I guess that I've picked up since being in the Institute is some of your, you know, visualization packages, like there's a bit of a Betamax versus VCR thing going on with Power BI and Tableau at the moment. But I know, or I think they both have like free student licenses. And again, it's just that thing that separates you a little bit from, you know, doing your charts in Excel to and elevates them a little bit to have that bit of interactivity that you can sit and you can have those discussions with a coach and you can be changing things on the fly and interacting with it. And you know, they talk about exploring the data as opposed to just looking at it. And again, that's something I think it's pretty important to certainly have an analyst CV at the moment.
You just described like loads of different ways that you operate and different skills and different ways you interact with data. If you had to pigeonhole yourself, what would you say that your role actually was? Forget performance innovation consultant, because you know that's not what you do on the ground, is it? How would you articulate that?
Good question. From a data perspective, I suppose, I think what I bring or what I try and bring is to try and tease out that value that might be inherent in the data that we're already capturing, and leave that leave that with the sport in a way that they can then manage without having to do too much heavy lifting or
yeah, you know,
arguably without any cutting and pasting, and that might involve, you know, transformation of data. It might involve looking at it in a different way. It might involve combination of different data sets and bring them together. It might involve a little bit of modeling, perhaps. You know, if it's a straight line sport and you can understand what the physics are to a certain extent, you can start to bring in, you know, I wouldn't use the term predictive modeling, but you can, you know, you could show, well, you know, if all things were equal and it was happening in a vacuum, you might think it looked like this, which is actually a use, you know, knowing those caveats, it's a useful start point and jumping off point. Yeah. I think
we have our quick fire final three questions. So our magic numbers, our usual suspects, part of this 10 episode series. So Dave, what gets you excited about using data and analysis?
So I think, it sounds corny, but it's the thrill of the chase a little bit of you know, that the idea that there's something in there, you know, that thing that could, that little nugget that if you found it could make a difference to your athletes or your coaches. And then at a more mundane level, I do really like helping someone do something that is going to take a lot of the necessary evils out of their day job. So if you do something and you can point to it and go, I've just saved you an hour a week, that's nice. It's the safest space to play, though, and you know, the big kicks come when you spot something in the data and you're like, yeah, that might actually make a difference to this athlete.
Yeah, for people who are data nerds out there, there's so much data out there that is freely available that you can just go and access and download and basically kind of do something in your spare time and see whether that's what you want to do, you know, maybe as a full-time job, especially if you're a student or like you were sat on the M6 and think about changing careers. And, you know, I think that there's so much out there that you can just go and do and see whether that's what you actually want to do. Oh yes. What data do you use most regularly in your job, Dave?
That's a really difficult one for me to answer, I suppose, because I guess the nature of my role is I'm constantly hopping sports, so it would look very different. I suppose my strengths lie in the kind of the high frequency stuff. So, you know, something like GPS that's producing quite a lot of data, and you know, figuring out ways to maybe not reduce it, but extract kind of characteristics from it in a way that gives you something that you can make coaching decisions off, as opposed to drawing squiggly lines and yeah, you know, going cross-eyed looking at them.
And then lastly, what does data analysis not do for you that you wished it could?
I think we're still a long way from really being able to see under the bonnet of an athlete and really, to use an automotive term, and really, you know, understand whether, you know, the reasons why we're seeing a change. So you might Sam, I know you like cycling. You might see your power go up, yeah. But do we really know why we've made that change yet? I don't think the technology exists to do that with much certainty yet. And so, you know, we can tell that we are making a difference. Perhaps we don't always know why we're making the difference. And I think once someone's cracked that, then we're in a whole new frontier with it, I think.
Yeah. And this won't be the least until 2021, but it's the 9th of December, so my power is definitely not going up at the moment in cycling context. So.
Downhill, maybe.
Yeah.